And we are on air for NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topic Sound Off here at Fan for Racing Radio. Joining me shortly will be our co-host, Sal Segala. And we've got a lot to cover tonight because we have two great guests coming on board. But in our first half hour, we are going to take some time to talk about a lot of racing from this past weekend, including a few short track updates. Then we'll get into the ARCA Menards Series race at Talladega. We'll review that race. And then the ARCA West race at Kern County Raceway. We'll close the half hour with a brief update on the Truck Series. They did not race this past weekend, but they will be racing at Darlington Raceway next weekend. At 9 o'clock, we do have our guest coming on board, Greg Van Alst, from his own racing team in the ARCA Menards Series. He raced at Talladega this past weekend. And definitely looking forward to talking to Greg Van Alst about his race at Talladega. I know he was looking to have a good race. He ended up finishing in 11th place at Talladega. And we're definitely looking forward to talking to him about that. Then we'll do an Xfinity review of their race at Talladega. Noah Gregson won that race, and it was a big win. And after that interview, we'll do our review of the Cup Series race at Talladega. And again, a big win for Ross Chastain in that event. So we've got a lot to talk about here tonight, and joining me now is our co-host, Sal Segala. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Well, thank you, Sharon.
Real quick, I did not mention that 10 o'clock is our Hot Topic Sound Off segment, so fans will definitely want to stay tuned for that, starting at 10 p.m. Eastern time tonight. Sal, we've got a few things that we want to start with in the short track news category, and one of the big things is Matt Hirschman held off Ryan Preece in the Spring Sizzler Open Modified race, and that earned him a ride in the SRX Series at Stafford Speedway. So a big win for Matt Hirschman.
Oh, yeah, it is. Kind of like what Tony Stewart's doing, you know, with, you know, there are certain tracks, you know, like when they had the one over here at Five Flags, you know, they, you know, the overall winner of the two races, you know, is going to get the, you know, is going to get the ride in SRX. And I just wish he would do something out here on the West Coast. I mean, so far he's already given actually they're giving three East Coast drivers because they're also having a fan vote for another race. So it'd be nice, you know, if he gave the West Coast, you know, a shot, you know, at the same opportunity, but either way, you know, congratulations, you know, and, you know, it's going to be a big opportunity for him to race, you know, in that series.
Yeah, I think what they're doing, Sal, is they're taking the different tracks that the SRX is going to and then taking a winner from one of the races at those specific tracks. And giving them a chance to race at that track when the SRX comes to town. So, yeah, that's pretty cool what they're doing. But I hear you. They need to get out there on the West Coast for an SRX race for sure.
Okay, so I'm getting tuned in here.
Okay, so I know some other short track racing that took place this weekend includes two races in the ARCA Menards Series. One is the ARCA Menards race that took place at Talladega, certainly not a short track, but a big event series, and we'll talk about that. But we'll also be talking about the ARCA West race at Kern County Raceway. I was so happy for Rev Racing this weekend. They had a big, big win with Nick Sanchez winning at Talladega Super Speedway. And Raja Caruth, also from Rev Racing, takes over the series points lead in the Arkham Menards Series. So a really big day for Rev Racing out at Talladega.
Yeah, it was. You know, like you said, you know, I'm just pretty going over all that right now.
Yeah, a lot of people thought Corey Heim would be the one to take that win, and it didn't happen, but it was definitely a big race for the Arkham Menards series just overall. And I'll tell you what, I was looking for the review. I know I have it up here at Fanfare Racing, so I think I'm going to go over there. He really snatched that win during the last lap. Two laps, when Rev Racing driver Nick Sanchez got shuffled out of the lead with 11 laps to go, it appeared his shot at winning at Talladega was over. But two laps later, Sanchez made a daring three-wide move to take the race lead moments before a caution flag waved to end the race early. Now, they had to end the race early because of the Arkham Menards, the Xfinity Series race.
Xfinity.
That's why I said Xfinity.
Yeah.
The Xfinity Series race that was due to come up next on the schedule. So that was his second win after claiming a victory last year at Kansas, or at their last race of the year, when Ty Gibbs won the championship. Nick Sanchez actually won that race. So pretty cool to see him come back and win another one. Corey Heim actually pushed Sanchez when he went from fourth to first. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead, Sharon. You're in the middle of doing a...
Did you get a chance to watch the race, Cal?
No, I didn't. You know what? I was up at Kern for the ARC West race and for the SRL Pro-Late race. And then,
oh, okay.
And then yesterday we were up in Disneyland yesterday. I take my wife, so kind of a trade off.
I got
to go
you.
Do race
I
on
gotcha.
Saturday and take her to Disneyland on Sunday. But I I'm working so far from home. I was trying to get home early enough to watch, you know, to at least catch some of it. I was able to catch some of the Cup race, which was the one that I really wanted to watch. I heard that was a really exciting finish, but. Yeah, I have it. I have recorded, so either way, I'm still going to watch it even after we finish with the show. I'm going to go back and watch it and see.
Well, Daniel Dye was up front trying to make a pass for the race lead. He first moved up to block the run by Brett Holmes and then moved low to try to block Corey Heim. And in the result was fell out. So that opened the door for Nick Sanchez. He moved low under Holmes and was able to go make a three-wide pass of Heim for the lead seconds before that caution was waving. So that spin is what allowed Sanchez to secure his first Super Speedway win for Rev Racing. And to go over kind of the rest of the top 10 here, because there were a lot of good runs here. Nick Sanchez, of course, finished first. Brett Holmes, an Alabama native, finished in second. Then it was Corey Heim in third. Thad Moffitt finishing fourth, Justine in fifth. Roger Caruth finished sixth, and as I said, good enough to put him in first place in the points standings. Then it was Drew Dollar, Ryan Huff, finishing eighth, Parker Chase ninth, Max Gutierrez finished 10th, but our guest, Greg Van Alt, finished in 11th place. He'll be coming on at 9 p.m. tonight, Eastern Time. So some nice finishes there for those drivers.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, they have a really good field, 33 cars, you know, get out there, you know, and, you know, to battle, you know, for the win, you know, and it's good, like you mentioned earlier, you know, it's good to see, you know, Rev Racing, you know, start to make a, you know, a statement, you know, all over all the other, you know, all the other big team cars, you know, to, you know, grab that win. And
right. Do you want to cover the points report, Sal, real quick before we move on to the Kern County race?
Yeah, so the points on the ARCA Menard is Roger Carruth is leading the points. Daniel Dice in second. Nick Sanchez in third. Parker Chase in fourth. And Corey Heim round out the top five. And actually, then from there, then we go to Tony Bredinger, Gus Dean, Amber Balkin, Ryan Huff, and Andy Jankowicz. Round off the top 10.
Yeah, only 1 point now separate Roger Carruth and Daniel Dye. 4 points between him and his teammate Nick Sanchez. Going Parker Chase 11 points back and Corey Heim at 20 points back. So it's becoming a very tight points race. So.
Oh yes, it is. I mean, yeah, when you look at the top, when you look at the top four. You know, and then, of course, you know, then our fifth pace driver, Corey Heim, you know, he's only got, this is only his second race, you know, and he still, you know, has a, you know, he still has a good, you know, he's still somewhere in the battle there. I mean, yeah, you know, if he would have caught that win, you know, then I was kind of looking at all the other drivers, you know, how many we have so far, you know, that have competed all, you know, all the races so far, the three races. And looks like we got like 1,
exactly.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 drivers so far that have competed in all three races.
Exactly. So a couple of drivers that certainly had good finishes from their previous two races, Zachary Kinkle, who we've had on the show, he finished in 20th place. And we mentioned Greg Van Halt finishing in 11th place. Amber Balkin, who was on the show recently, she had a 12th place finish. So some of these guys, it helped them kind of move up the series point standings a little bit by improving their finishing position out there at Talladega this weekend.
Yeah, and then, you know, gosh, that was a hard hit that that Richard Garvey took too. I was watching the replay of it. You know, and
yeah,
man, that was brutal.
Yeah, that was brutal. I was happy that he was okay. I know Scott Melton had a broken leg after his accident as well. So we wish him a speedy recovery from that.
Yeah, these drivers are racing hard. They're racing at fast speeds, and you know, it kind of reminds me, you know, when the, you know, when Cup first went over there, you know, they were talking, you know, about the same thing, you know, the speeds, you know, and the, you know, the dangers of running these, you know, these restrictor plate, these restrictor plate races, you know.
Exactly. So we do take it for granted all the advancements that racing in general has taken, NASCAR in particular. These guys are really fighting hard for these wins. And the competition is very stiff. A lot of these drivers are very, very talented. And when you have a lot of talented drivers all working together to get that win, it makes it kind of tough. Now, Alabama driver Brett Holmes got closer than he's ever been to victory at his home track. He scored a runner-up result in his number 23 Golden Eagle Chevrolet. His previous best finish at Talladega was a third place in 2020. Nick Sanchez's victory made him the 42nd different driver to win an ARCA race at Talladega. Ryan Huff's eighth place finish matched a career best for the driver from Williamsburg, Virginia. He previously finished eighth at Kentucky Speedway in 2020. Max Gutierrez's 10th place finish was his first top 10 result in the ARCA Menard Series in seven starts dating back to 2020. The General Tire 200 was slowed by 6 caution flags for 29 laps and featured 4 leaders and 7 lead changes. Scott Melton, who suffered a compound fracture in his left leg in the crash Saturday, has undergone 1 surgery, and he's slated to undergo a 2nd to repair his injured leg. He made that announcement on social media. So, again, we wish him a speedy recovery.
Yeah, well, yeah, we definitely wish any driver, you know, gets in a wreck like that, you know, a speedy recovery, and, you know, hope, you know, they get back, you know, behind the wheel real soon, you know, and get back to, you know, what they love doing.
Exactly right. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on now to the ARCA West race that took place at Kern County Raceway. The race winner there was 16-year-old Landon Lewis. And what I thought was so interesting about his victory is that the previous win that he had at he's had 2 debut races in the ARCA series. One was this weekend at Kern County Raceway in the ARCA West, and he had one other one. I'll bring it up here in just a second. He also won in just his 2nd ARCA Menards Series start appearance at DeCoin State Fairgrounds in Illinois last year. So, you know, in 3 races that he's had between the ARCA West and the ARCA Menards Series, he's got 2 victories. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. You know, and even talking with him, about the his first one, and then afterwards, you know, after the race, you know, I was talking about the second one, you know, and, you know, he says he comes from a dirt background, but he says he goes, he really liked this asphalt, you know, racing, you know, and then when you have a mentor like Ron Hornaday Jr., you know, in your stable, you know, that makes it, you know, a lot more helpful.
It really does. Ron Hornaday is a master at restarts, and if he can, you know, transfer that to a driver like Landon Lewis, and he's got a stable of drivers that he's working with. It's not just Landon Lewis, but, you know, who better to learn from than a driver like Ron Hornaday Jr., for sure. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, he on his restart, he was spot on. I mean, he didn't miss a restart. You know, that's one of the places, you know, where a lot of drivers have problems with. But I'll tell you right now, he didn't miss a beat when it came to the when it came to all his restarts. Hit all of them, and he was really impressive.
He really was impressive, and to just kind of go over the top 10 drivers here. Landon Lewis finishing first. Then it was Jake Drew. He's got the nickname of P2 Drew. And I know he wants to shed that nickname with a victory. He's come so close so many times. Cole Moore finished in 3rd place. Tanner Rice had a 4th place finish. Paul Pedroncelli Jr. Finished in 5th place, followed by Todd Souza in 6th place. Trevor Huddleston had a 7th place finish. Austin Herzog finished in 8th. Takuma Koga in 9th. And Amber Slagle finished in 10th place. So some nice finishes there for some of these drivers.
Oh, yeah, it was really good finishes, you know, for all the drivers. I mean, it was a good field. You know, it was a good field of drivers, as far as 18 drivers, the only time we have more than 18 or anywhere close to that is when we go to Phoenix or we go to Sonoma are the only 2 tracks, mm-hmm. But usually, yeah, anything in between, I mean, if you go back 2, 3, 4 years, you know, we haven't really had a good outing. But you know, there's a lot of drivers, you know, there's a few drivers, you know, that don't even run the series regularly. You know, they came out, you know, they wanted to race this track. Glenn was one of them. Amber was another one.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle Keller was another one. He's a local. Andrew Tuttle was another one. Tripp Gaylord, you know, they were all, you know, part of the newer drivers, you know, who's not running full-time, you know, but still came out, you know, to support the series and, you know, and get their car in the mix.
Exactly. Now, Dave Drew finished second, but that was enough to put him at the top of the point standings. You want to cover that, Sal?
Yeah. So the standings for the ARCA West now is we got Jake Drew leading the points. And then only 5 points back from Jake Drew is Tanner Reif, who is our Urendale Speedway winner. And then 1 point behind Tanner is Cole Moore. Fourth is Paul Petroselli Jr., who is also the pole sitter for this race. And then round out the top five is Austin Herzog, who's one of the Bill McAnally racing drivers, who's 15 points out of first. And then from there, then we go down to Todd Sousa in sixth. Seventh is Takuma Koga, who travels all the way from Japan to race in this series. And then Joey East, who's one of our local drivers out here in actually from up north. And then Sebastian Arias comes from Bogota, Colombia, to race in the series. And then 10th is Bridget Burgess, to round up the
and
top
she's
10.
From Great Britain.
Yeah, she's from Great Britain.
Okay, so, it's a really tight point battle shaping up in the West. And it makes it fun to think about the next races that are coming up in this series.
Yeah, there is. I mean, you know, I talked to, you know, you talked to a few of the drivers, you know, and they're, you know, that's what they're talking about, you know, a lot of them are looking forward to Phoenix at the end of the year, and that's why they have to catch these few races that they catch now. NASCAR mm-hmm. won't allow them to run Phoenix unless they've, you know, proven themselves that they can run other tracks, you know, and run them competitively, not just be a start and park driver, you know, and you know, hopefully when Phoenix comes around, you know, when it comes to the big stage, you know, and all of a sudden they're just going to let them get out there and race. It's not going to happen like that. So, you know, it's going to be exciting, you know, until the end of the season, you know, to see how, you know, how all this shakes out. Not only that, but, you know, with
yes.
the points with Jake and Tanner, so, you know, so close to each other, along with Cole Moore. Cole Moore, he's another Bill McAnally car. Cole's another one to watch for. Cole can pop off a win or two here before the end of the season.
Absolutely. Now, real quick, I want to give you an update on when the next races are coming up. The next race will be the ARCA East General Tire 125 on April 29th at Dover Motor Speedway. We'll do a full preview of that race on Thursday night. On May 14th, the ARCA Menards Series will be racing at Kansas Speedway. That will be the Dutch Boy 150 on Fox Sports 1. You'll be able to watch that race. Again, we'll do a full preview the Thursday before. June 4th, the ARCA West will be racing the Portland 100 at Portland International Raceway. That will be live streamed on Flow Racing. The race at Dover will also be, for the ARCA East, will also be on Flow Racing. The next Sioux Chiefs Showdown race will be until June the 11th, and that will be at Iowa Speedway. That one will be televised on MAV TV. So a lot of racing coming up here, and we're looking forward to that. Real quick, I also want to give a quick update on the truck series, Sal, because they did not race this past weekend, but their next race will be at Darlington Raceway on Friday, May the 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Practice will be on Friday along with qualifying. And again, we'll do the preview the Thursday before, but that race will be televised on Fox Sports 1. And I wanted to make sure We've got gave some of that information. If you go over to J-Ski's, you'll see a lot of the paint schemes the truck will have. This is a traditional throwback weekend. And like Matt DiBenedetto is going to have on his Rackley Ward truck, he's going to honor Sterling Marlin with his throwback scheme. Spencer Boyce running a Michael Waltrip throwback scheme. Haley Deegan's throwback is to Bobby Allison. So you'll be able to see a lot of those throwback schemes over there at J-Ski. Any thoughts, Jay or Sal?
I was waiting for that.
I know. I try so hard not to do that. It slips out.
I know. Yeah, we're looking forward to a lot of good racing still coming up. I mean, all the series are really doing good, you know, as far as, you know, what we're seeing out there, you know what, and you know, the Arca Menards, you know, they have, you know, when they first broke up from the K&N, you know, it was kind of difficult to see, you know, how all this is going to play out. But, I mean, you know what, they're doing a really good job with the, you know, as far as, you know, the different divisions they're running, you know what, and how everything is, you know, it's coming together, you know what, and the racing is good, you know. You know, like I said, when you get a chance to see the race from Kerr, you're really going to enjoy it.
Yeah, we were talking about the truck series race at Darlington that's coming up. There's an update to the truck series, but a lot of the drivers from the Arca Menards series end up racing in the truck series. Drivers like Derek Krauss and a lot of these drivers came from the Grant Infinger, came from the Arca Menards series and won championships in the Arca Menards series and are now racing in the Camping World Truck Series. So I can't wait to see the throwback schemes for these Truck Series drivers when they race at Darlington coming up here on May the 6th. So mark that one on the calendar. It's going to be a fun race to watch. The Dead on Tools.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. You know what? And it's going to be, like you said, the throwbacks are, you know, the throwbacks are really, you know, I think it's one of the fan favorites because, you know, you don't know what they're going to do until it's almost time, you know, a week or two, you know, before, you know, that they'll actually, you know, talk about, you know, who they're going to honor, you know. And, you know, you get some of our local drivers out here, you know, that race from out here, you know, that are trying to, you know, also, you know, do a throwback, you know, for our, you know, for our local guys, you know, that they grew up out here. So it's going to be exciting, you know, and you know, the trucks always put on a good show. So I'm sure nobody's going to be disappointed. Yeah.
I totally agree with you. Always a fun weekend. Okay, now coming up next, we have our guest coming on board, Greg Van Alt. He's been on the show with us before. I know he loves the Super Speedways. He's had the Pole Award at these tracks. And this past weekend at Talladega, after a couple of rough races, Greg Van Alt was able to come home with an 11th place finish with his own race team, and I know that had to be very exciting. So first of all, Greg, welcome back to the show. We're looking forward to catching up with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
Okay. I know you had you raced at Daytona, then you went out to Phoenix and raced out there and back to Talladega. Tell us about your thoughts about your race at Talladega this past weekend, because I know the first two races didn't quite go according to plan.
Yeah, we were solid this weekend at Talladega. I know we had that short little practice session and time didn't matter, but we were second quick of the field. So, you know, that's huge for us. We raced inside the the top seven or eight all race. And then just right there at the end, it got fairly rough. And there's moves that I could have made, but, man, some of those guys were driving just like they didn't have to work on their own race cars. And, unfortunately, I got to work on mine. So, you know, it probably didn't take as many chances as a few of the others did. Once I knew we couldn't really win the race and kind of got knocked back, it was more of just survival. And then the way they shortened the race and told us that the next flag was going to call the race, I seen a wreck getting ready to happen and just kind of bailed. And it cost us a couple spots, but, you know, good thing is we brought the race car home in one piece, rolled it in the trailer, and we know now that we can start looking ahead and work towards Daytona in February of 2023.
Yes, indeed. And what you accomplished at Talladega is no small feat. Yeah, I mean, and you had a good car at Daytona, too. You took the pole at Daytona. You qualified second at Talladega. So you definitely have a car that's capable of winning. You know, it is tough when the competition is just so tough right now. But to bring your car home in one piece and ready for the next race is a big accomplishment, Greg.
Yeah, for sure. To finish 11th against the teams that we're racing against, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, you know, we do this out of our backyard shop. It's a small family team. We don't have any employees. Basically, like I keep saying, it's just a group of late model guys that went ARCA racing. And you know, we had a few rough races here in the beginning of the year, but Talladega seems to have gotten us back on track, and, you know, hopefully we can continue that on going to Kansas.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your team, and I'm talking about your on-the-road team, because do you have somebody on the pit box that are spotting for you?
Yes, I'm sure
you do at Talladega. That's too big of a track not to have a spotter.
Yeah, so Jim Long is our crew chief again this year. It's the same team we had last year. Jim Long is our crew chief again. And then Brandon Lines is our spotter. And, of course, he's William Byron's spotter in the Cup Series. So, you know, lots of experience, lots of knowledge. These guys point me in the right direction, and I'm just the guy that's fortunate enough to wheel the thing.
Absolutely. And your race shop is out in Anderson, Indiana. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep. We did upgrade there over the winter. We built a new race shop. It's still in my backyard, just a little bit further down the hill. But yeah, we've got a little bit nicer shop than what we've had in years past. And That tends to help us just because our time is limited since we all have normal day jobs. We work on the cars in the evenings, and there's three of us that pretty much dedicate almost every evening to it. But there's, you know, we've all got kids and other things going on. So, you know, there's nights that I can't get out there, but the other guys can. Now that we have the room, we can work on more than one car at a time. So makes it a little easier for us.
Well, you guys, I hope you gave each other a big pat on the back after this weekend at Talladega and your finish there. You had some things to celebrate there. Now, we have our co-host on board with us tonight, Sal Segala, and I know he has some questions for you as well, Greg.
First of all, Greg, I want to tell you thanks for coming on. Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
First of all, Greg, I just want to say thanks for coming on the show. You know, I was, you know, listening to you and Sharon talk, you know, and you're speaking, you know, about, you know, being a small team, you know, working out of a garage, you know, and, you know, or starting like that, you know, finally getting a shop and you know, it's tough, you know. We see a lot of small teams, but yeah, we've seen a lot of small teams make big gains, you know, want to be competitive. And after you know, seeing, you know, you guys get that, you know, 11th place finish this past week, and especially at Talladega, that had to be a big confidence booster for the team all in all.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm not going to lie. I mean, we were a little disappointed with 11th just because we were running inside the top. I mean, I think for the most part, we were inside the top six all race. But it's more of, you know, you get back home, you get kind of digested from it, and you're like, man, we finished 11th at Talladega. Like, you know that that's an accomplishment. But when you're in the heat of the battle, you don't think about it because you're just going through the motions of racing, and, you know, you can see the front all day long. You think you got a shot, and then circumstances, and you just kind of get rooted out of the draft, and, you know, you end up getting a little bit worse finish than what you thought. But to roll the car in the trailer, I mean, we ran four speedway races, and this is the first one we finished by all four reasons, you know, or three of those other three races, all reasons of outside of our control. You know, that's the thing with speedway racing, is a lot of things can happen in a short amount of time that just can ruin your day. So we was pretty happy with the result.
You know, and actually, you know, when, you know, everybody talks about, you know, especially, you know, speedway races, you know, with Talladega and Daytona, you know, when you have a two or three car team, you know, at least, you know, if you're together, you know, you have a partner. How hard is it to race, you know, when you're a one car team, you know, you're out there, you know, you're trying to find somebody, you know, to draft with, you know, is it easy, you know, just to kind of fall in line with someone, or is there certain drivers that, you know, that you can kind of get, you know, together with, you know, that maybe you guys have talked, you know, throughout the season, you know, and maybe, you know, try and get that drafting partner.
Yeah, we had guys that we had talked with that, you know, we were supposed to kind of be teammates with, and I don't want to say anything bad because, I mean, we was working together at some points in the race, and then at other points in the race we weren't, and it just so happened to work out when we didn't work good together. It just didn't benefit us any, you know, in the end. And, you know, we made some moves together that benefited all of us. So it's just tough, right? Like, I mean, you plan and you plan and you plan, and everything goes out the window when the green flag drops, and you try to get hooked up with the right people that you want to be with. And it's tough. I mean, there's a lot that can happen. I mean, you make moves that you don't intend to happen because you get a run, and you can't just run into the guy because, you know, you've got too much energy and you're just going to turn him if you hit him. So you have to jump lines, and it's tough to stay loyal. But sometimes you just have to make the move when it presents itself. And the guys that I was working with, I kind of feel like that's kind of what happened, is they were presented with an opportunity and they took it. And I was just, unfortunately, just kind of left hanging.
You know, and being a rookie in the season, have you found it hard? When you're around the garage, you know, like before or after a race, you know, you start talking to, you know, like some of the veterans and stuff like that. How hard is it to, I guess what I'm trying to say is, how hard is it to kind of, you know, I mean, not really get to like a click, but just to get advice and stuff, you know, from the veteran drivers and stuff like that.
Well, fortunately, the way the ARCA series runs, I'm still considered a rookie just because we haven't had enough starts. But we ran quite a bit last year. We ran all the speedway races. So I wouldn't say there's a click, but there's definitely more respect from the competitors, both out on the racetrack and in the garage, than I had this time last year. And that makes it easier to know, you know, who you can work with, who you can't work with, the moves you can make, and you just learn to trust different guys' driving abilities. But yeah, for the most part, I mean, it's definitely smoother this year than it was last year running the plate stuff, just because I have more experience.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This series is really being shared. You know, we've talked about it, you know, and I mean, it's really grown, you know what, and the level of competition has really gotten, I mean, it's in the last couple of years, you know, that the level of competition has really gone up, you know. I mean, you know, you watch race after race, you know, you see, you know, I mean, there's always intensity. There's always, you know, everybody with that will to win. But for some reason, the ARCA series, it's just, you know, it's really taken off. You know, it's like, it's almost one of the premier series to watch, you know, next to, you know, the Cup and Xfinity.
Yeah, it's definitely getting a lot more attention, both from fans and competitors alike. You know, I know several years ago, watching it on TV and whatnot, it just seemed like the competition, there'd be like two or three cars. And now, you know, I mean, heck, Saturday at Talladega, there was probably 15 to 20 cars that could have won that race, just the circumstances, you know, going the right way. And I would say, you know, they have 10 at least on mile and a halfs that are kind of in that same boat. So yeah, it's definitely gotten more competitive, and I think ARCA's making the right moves to make it that way. And as it progresses, I think you're just going to see more and more and more, competitive racers come into the ARCA series. I know of there's some late model people that I've raced with and whatnot that, you know, bounce ideas off of me that are looking to get into ARCA. So I think you'll see more of that as you know, this season progresses in the next few.
Well, with that, you know, I just want to say good luck the rest of the season. You know, hopefully, you know, we'll, you know, you'll grab a win. You know, you can come back on the show. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Looking ahead to Kansas, what are your thoughts going into Kansas and your goals for that race?
We had the spring race last year. We were pretty good. I think we qualified 7th or 8th, and I think we finished 6th. So we kind of expect to be top 5. That's kind of our expectations and goal going into it. But we struggled last fall. Had some issues with the car that we're pretty confident we found. Yeah, we're hoping to have a solid day, hopefully a top 5. We just need to click off some solid top 10 finishes to try to maybe get ourselves back into the points hunt again. Just the first two races of the year just, you know, absolutely set us behind. Both in points and, you know, just getting things ready to move on to the next race. But hopefully Kansas will be a solid showing for us.
Well, you made a big jump this week in the point standings with that 11th place finish. So I expect that that's going to continue as the season progresses. And it's early yet, so there's still a lot of time, Greg. Can make a difference there. And definitely looking forward to having you back on the show here throughout the season. And before you go, let's give you a chance to do any shout-outs that you want to make, and also make sure fans know how they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, definitely want to thank CB Fabricating for everything that they do to keep us in the hunt here, and my fence company, Top Choice Fence. Those between the two of us, that's how we're able to make this happen. Definitely want to thank all my crew guys that come with us every weekend. You can find us on Facebook. It's under Van Alst Motorsports. Twitter is just at Greg Van Alst 35, and I've recently started playing around on TikTok. That's just Greg Van Alst 35 on there.
Okay, that's fantastic. Greg, it was great catching up with you. I was real happy to see I know it's a disappointing. You were going after the victory, or you know, the best finish you can get. But I still think 11th place finish is a great finish for you guys. And I'm sure there's things you can take away from Talladega that's going to help you on the next Super Speedway event.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's kind of funny. We got a big whiteboard that talks about, or that, that for each car that we have, and you know, we list on what race the next race for that car is, and you know, we've already got Daytona 2023 on that board for that car. So, speedway racing, I think, is probably my favorite form of racing, and we're already looking forward to Daytona next year.
Okay, that's good news. Well, thank you so much for being on the show with us tonight. And again, we'll look forward to talking to you again the next time down the road.
All righty, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care, Greg. All right, that is Greg Van Alst. He has his own race team, Van Alst Motorsports, out of Anderson, Indiana. So really cool to talk with him again tonight here, Jay.
Yeah, you know what? It's kind of like when you said that, it kind of reminds me of out where all the NHRA teams are, because they're all out in Indiana. You know, you always hear about, you know, where the NASCAR teams are all in, you know, North Carolina. And, you know, so kind of when you said that, I was kind of like, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on, Sal, to the Xfinity Series race at Talladega Super Speedway, the 31st annual Ag Pro 300. The race winner was Noah Gregson at the age of 23, and his number 9 Bass Pro Shops True Timber BRCC Chevrolet with Junior Motorsports. His crew chief this weekend, Luke Lambert, used to be a former crew chief of Jeff Burton. So really cool to see him working with Noah Gregson now. Noah Gregson, he won, it was his 7th victory in 111 Xfinity Series races, his 2nd victory and 6th top 10 finish this season, and his 1st victory and 5th top 10 finishes in 7 races at Talladega Super Speedway. Jeffrey Earnhardt, how exciting was it to see the number 3 car racing up front for that victory? And he made some amazing moves. Jeffrey Earnhardt posted.
I'm just saying these fans, I'm sure, were loving it.
Oh, I'm sure they were loving it. It was his first top 10 finish in 10 races at Talladega and his first top 10 finish this season. A.J. Allmendinger in 3rd posted his 3rd top 10 finish in 5 races at Talladega. Kyle Sieg, 18th, was the highest finishing rookie of the races, and A.J. Allmendinger actually won that $100,000 bonus for the Dash for Cash bonus this weekend. Noah Gregson was able to outlast 3 overtime restarts on Saturday at Talladega. He grabbed the lead on a restart in the 3rd overtime, and driving for Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s Junior Motorsports. A lot of Earnhardt tie-ins here this weekend at Talladega in the Xfinity Series. He took control of the restart on that 3rd overtime to get his 2nd win of the year. Jeffrey Earnhardt coming in second place. Ryan Sieg finished in 4th behind J.J. Allmendinger. Then it was Landon Castle finishing in 5th place. Anthony Alfredo finished 6th. Riley Herbst in 7th. Joe Graff Jr. finished 8th. That's a great finish for him. Myatt Snyder in 9th. And Brett Moffitt rounds out the top 10. There were, Austin, Josh Berry won the 1st stage of the season with the number 7 of Justin Allgaier picking up his first victory of the season in the second stage. Allgaier, however, ran out of fuel as the leader coming to the green flag in the third overtime. There were 25 lead changes among 14 drivers, 10 cautions, the 39 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 123.024 miles per hour. Thoughts on those race results, Sal?
Yeah, it was. I'll tell you, it was one for the ages. I really thought Earnhardt was gonna get the win. I mean, he was that last restart. You know, it was a really great finish. You know, congrats to Noah Gragson, of course, getting the win. But you know, the fans were pulling for an Earnhardt to get in there, especially with Larry McReynolds as the crew chief, who hasn't been.
Yes, how fantastic was that?
He's like 22 years since he's been on the box, you know, and there he was, you know, for Jeffrey Earnhardt in the number 3, you know, for them to get the run that they did. I mean, Jeffrey Earnhardt, I think he ended up on the pole too, so.
Yes,
it was a really good weekend. It was a really good weekend for Richard Childress Racing.
Okay. There were several drivers who had accidents. It's kind of a lot, so I'm not going to go over all of those this time around. But the margin of victory was 0.131 seconds. So it was a tight finish. Some amazing moves by Noah Gragson as well as Jeffrey Earnhardt. I thought both of those guys made some great moves at the end of that race. And it was a fun race to watch, a fun finish.
Yeah, it was a fun finish. You know, and it's everything that, you know, I guess everything that we expect, you know, from a super speedway, you know, is, you know, everybody just biding their time waiting for the last, you know, for the white flag to come out, you know, to see who, you know, who's going to make the move, who's going to be where, you know, and I'll tell you, it was a crazy finish. I mean, it was really something. I mean, we've had a few in the past few years where really nothing happened. You know, the driver that was out front basically won the race. You know, nobody made moves, but this time around, I mean, the drivers everybody's hungry for that win. Everybody wants to get into the playoffs. And you know, this was a good opportunity, you know, for a lot of the drivers, you know, to make that, that move, you know, to get in there.
Yes, indeed. Let's go ahead and cover the points report, because even though A.J. Allmendinger didn't win the race, he's still at the top of the list.
Yeah, let me get the... Weird, my thing don't want to let me pull up the points. Oh, here it is. Oh. Ah. Why is it?
You want me to go ahead and start, Jay, Sal?
Yeah, it's not letting me.
Okay. I picked it up at J-Ski's. I don't know where you're trying to pick it up at. But,
that's where I'm at.
J-Ski's.
That's where I'm at J-Ski's.
Oh, okay.
Oh, here it is. Okay,
that's
here
right.
It is. You know what? Yeah, the one was blacked out. And then I had to go to another one. But
okay.
Let's see. Okay, so A.J. Allmendinger is leading the points. Noah Gragson in second. Ty Gibbs in third. Josh Berry fourth. Brandon Jones fifth. Justin Allgaier in sixth, and Ryan Sieg round out the top six. Let me see how we look in the...
Well, Ryan Sieg is seventh.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah, Justin Allgaier sixth. And then from there, we go seventh is Ryan Sieg. Eighth is Sam Mayer. Ninth is Austin Hill, who's the highest, still our highest rookie. 10th is Riley Herbst. 11th is Landon Castle. 12th is Daniel Hemric. He's on the bubble. And Anthony Alfredo sitting in third is 10 points behind him for that last bubble spot.
Yeah, this is really shaping up. Landon Creed had a really good run. Landon Castle. I thought he had a really good run with that top five finish in the Xfinity Series. I'm really happy that he's racing the Xfinity Series this year, because I think we're going to see some really good runs from him. And it put him in that top 12.
Yeah, you know, and then Sheldon Creed took that hard hit on that one overtime, and I really thought Sheldon, you know, it's going to be a race, you know, where he was going to, you know, finally, you know, make up some points. You know, I know everybody expected Sheldon, you know, to do a lot better than where he's at now. He's sitting 14th in points, and he just really hasn't had a good season. You know, he's had a couple DNFs, you know, wrecks and stuff like that. But I'm sure we'll see him come around before the end of the season.
Yep. Well, we're 9 races in. We've got a lot of racing to do. For the regular season before we start into the playoffs. But this is really shaping up to be pretty exciting. Ty Gibbs has the most playoff points, followed by Noah Gragson. Ty Gibbs has 17 to Noah Gragson's 13. Those guys are the leaders right now. AJ Allmendinger, 7 playoff points. I'll tell you what, the racing has been really good. We're going to talk about the Cup Series later. That was an exciting race as well. But Sal, let's set up your guest that's coming on board here in a few minutes at 9:30.
Okay, our guest is Marty Mello from Pepper Jack Kennels. He's when we had Derek Thorne on the show at the beginning of the season, Derek had mentioned, you know, about having, you know, taking a whole different route this year, you know, as far as, you know, sponsorship and, you know, doing everything, you know, doing a lot of East Coast racing this year. And actually, it's Pepper Jack Farms, you know, are the ones that are behind everything that Derek Thorne has going on for this season. So it's an exciting season for them. And actually, they also picked up sponsorship over at Pipeline Speedway this year with the they have a like a little party deck up in Turn 4. So they went and renamed that, you know, the Pepper Jack Kennels party deck and all that. And there's a lot of exciting stuff going on this year, you know, with Derek and you know, with his racing, you know, with this sponsorship, you know. And I think I think getting Marty on the show, you know, to talk about it, you know, there's a lot, you know, I know he wants to talk about, you know, the sponsorship, you know, what's going on with Derek and stuff like that. I think it's going to be really an interesting conversation, you know, to get the kind of like some behind the scenes stuff, you know, on how hard it is to sponsor. Because you got to remember, this is short track racing. This isn't Xfinity. This isn't Cup. This is an ARCA, but this is short track racing, where a lot of these drivers, you know, they do it for the love of the sport, you know, and they're building cars. Yeah, they have somehow shops. A lot of them are building cars, you know, their own garages. You know, they build a big garage at their house to build their cars. But, you know, we're talking about short track racing and basically sponsorship at a, you know, an Xfinity and Cup level. So it's going to be a really exciting and interesting conversation, you know, when Marty comes on.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, they're located in Wisconsin, I guess. So that race at Slinger Nationals is going to be a big event for these guys. Derek Thorne, because I know he's planning to race at Slinger Nationals this year. So he's here. Marty is here, Sal. So if you want to go ahead and introduce him and start the interview, that'd be great.
Okay, our next guest is Marty Mello from Pepper Jack Kennels. You know, like I said, you know, him and his wife Misty, you know, are basically the head of taking over all the sponsorship, you know, for Derek, you know, and getting Derek, you know, into racing on the East Coast this season, which is really exciting, you know. you know, and there's a lot that went into it. I know during the off season, you know, with Marty and Derek and, you know, Byron Campbell, you know, and the, you know, the team and what they got going on, what they, the races that they still have left, like you mentioned, Sharon, they got Slinger, you know, which is kind of going to be kind of their home track. Plus they're based in Texas. And, I'll tell you, I've talked with Marty and Misty a few times, and it's exciting. And with that, we want to welcome Marty to the show and just give us a little bit of background.
Hey, guys. Glad to be on. Thanks for having me. First off, just tuned in a little bit there right before I jumped on tonight. But, yeah, happy to be on, and we're having a good start to the season, obviously, with Campbell Motorsports and Derek and the whole team. And, you know, we're just trying to do things a little differently this year for them and get them more off the West Coast out here in the Midwest and the East Coast racing some of these more marquee races.
So how tough is it to at the level, especially with the level that, well, everyone knows the level that Derek races at. And then, you know, to get, you know, you and Misty, you know, behind, you know, the, you know, behind all the sponsorship, you know, so Derek can have this opportunity. Everybody knows across the board, you know, sponsorship isn't easy. You know, it's tough, and especially at a short track level. So how did all this come about, and how are you guys making it all to where it's all, it looks like it's all working?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people are involved in that. Of course, we're spearheading up some of the management and the seeking of the sponsorship for Derek, which I have a little bit of background in. But my wife's company, Pepper Jack Kennels, you know, we committed, and there's other great sponsors that have been on this team for years, PowerGrade and several others that wanted to do this. But with us coming on and basically saying, hey, we're going to do it, we're going to back it, and kind of, you know, put the checkbook up and say, hey, let's go try to sell these races, but let's commit to it so the team can get focused and started on traveling and everything goes into it. But it is difficult. Short track racing, grassroots racing, I think is a lot of fun, obviously, but people don't really focus on the advantages from a marketing standpoint. It's relatively cost effective. You could get in with teams, tracks, and even on like Racing America Flow TV now for very good pricing. Because to be honest with you, there hasn't been a lot of demand of sponsors coming in. So they will really work with you. So in that aspect, we're getting a lot. I want to say for a little, cause you know, we're spending it, but our rate of return is tremendous. When we jumped on with Derek last July, August, it was more of a fun thing getting back with Derek. We'd been with him years ago and had a good relationship with Derek, but it was more of a fun thing really going into the Snowball Derby for my 50th birthday, and it just kind of grew from there. And the return we got in our business was overwhelming, and the support. So we just, you know, started partnering up with partners that we had in place for our business and some other sponsors that were out there, like the Tool Shack out of Pensacola, Family Funeral Cremation. They were interested, and we kind of got some deals going with them, and it just really keeps snowballing from there.
So away from the, you know, from all the sponsorship and everything, what's it like to work with Derek, you know, especially, you know, with the start of the season you guys have had? You know, so far you guys have run three races, you know, you've won two of them, you know, which is, you know, especially, you know, like you said, you know, taking him off of the West Coast, you know, where he's, you know, his comfort zone, and putting him into the, you know, to the East Coast, you know, where there's a little bit more, you know, I was just going to say it, there's a little bit more competition, you know, and the racing, you know, is a lot different than what we see out here on the West Coast.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we believed in Derek's talent, obviously, and the team. I mean, we're not getting that Mike and the whole team. Sal, you've been involved in some of that for years with the team. The whole team has really got, I can't explain the chemistry, as my wife calls it, the mojo. It's so dynamic and so special. It is. We wanted to bring him off the West Coast and go out. We've heard it. Everyone's heard it. Oh, yeah, he does that out there on the West Coast, but bring him out here. Well, we are bringing him out here, and that's what we want to focus on. I know we had some mishap with Chandler Smith at the Derby in this last Blizzard races, but, you know, we don't want to focus on that. We want to focus on what Derek's doing. We're asking the team to do a lot. They're traveling 3,000-4,000 miles each way and competing, and we've asked them to do that. And like you said, they've run, they've got a first, another first, and then unfortunately one did not finish there in Pensacola, DNF. But two out of three races he's won, and up against the big names, the big teams. And everyone knew Byron Campbell Motorsports is the big team, and Derek is the big driver. But you know the old saying, you got to go do it to show them. And I'm sure we'll have some setbacks this year. I'm sure we will. It's great competition out there. But the start we've had is making all of our supporters and his fan base excited. A lot of people don't understand. We do a lot of things with our marketing. We asked, coming on in January, I think it was, that they did a little promo out there on social media. Kind of Daryl Abbott put that together for us, asking where would the fans like to see Derek run. And we took that information, and it's interesting. Slinger was not originally on our schedule for a couple of reasons. And the fans really, they calculated all out. They wanted to really see him at Slinger was one of the top responses we got. So we, Misty says, we're adding Slinger, and it's in our backyard, of course, so we added Slinger. So we're trying to listen to the fans. We're trying, of course, the sponsors where they want to go. And, you know, it's going to be tough, but he's holding his own, and the team's holding their own so far.
You know, and you spoke about, you know, a little bit of setback, you know, and second and third race, you know, at Five Flags, you know, that's, you know, there, you had a little setback, but you guys came back from what, 12 hours, and then come back to win the race the way he won the second race. I mean, you know, he just methodically picked off each driver, you know, got the win. And, you know, to put what happened the night before behind you, you know, with that short of time, I mean, it had to take a lot of talking, you know, a lot of encouragement, you know, from not only you, but from everybody involved in the team.
There was. That was just such an emotional night when all that happened, the way it played out. And we had discussions with, you know, the track officials and owner and the promoters and the series director and the team, and Byron was making calls from the West Coast with the team in contact. And, you know, your initial gut is, until emotions calm down, your initial gut feeling is we don't need to do this if that's the way they're going to handle things, and we're out of here. And that was overall kind of a feeling. I'm not going to speak for everyone, but once the emotions calmed down into the evening and we were up early, and actually Mike Keene and Vicky brought the majority of the team with Derek over to where Misty and I were at the track and staying that morning, and they all talked. It was really up to what the team wanted to do, and they really they didn't want to go home. They wanted to race, and, you know, everyone forgets what we're asking them to do. They were off a little bit on Friday, and for us being off a little bit, he was still fastest in practice, most of them in qualified fastest, But everything, we're asking, he's got 2 to 3 month breaks in the schedule. That's, we're working on fixing that right now. The team is, I don't want to say they're rusty, but when these other teams are racing 2 to 3 times a month, we're racing a big race once every 2 to 3 months. So they were just a little off, still fast, still the same team, but the mojo was just a little bit off on Friday, and it was just a sequence of events that was unfortunate. But for the team to rebound, you saw the Campbell Motorsports, which Byron has instilled that and bred that into that team for 8-10 years at least. They go to win, and they're not going to quit. They have the resources through Byron, and their attitude that morning was total focused. The rust was knocked off, and let's go do what we can do is kind of their attitude, and they did.
So So how is it to be involved, you know, with everything that you just said, you know, with Campbell Motorsports and Derek, you know, and then, you know, to come in, like you said, you know, spearhead all the sponsorships, you know, and to get some of the sponsors you've got. I mean, you know, when you look across, you know, I mean, who Derek still has, you know, like with Power Grade, you know, and a few of the other ones, you know, then of course, you know, Chris comes on, you know, when you guys get out to Pensacola, you know, with the funeral home. You know, then you have Colton in there, you know, with the tool shack, you know, and of course, you know, like you said, when we had spoke, you know, you're going to have a different sponsor, you know, in there for Slinger. You know, this is something, like I said, in short track racing, that's, it's unheard of to get to line up and keep these sponsors.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. It is unheard of. I think we could make it more, let's hope we can make it more of the normal. The money that you need to spend doesn't have to be astronomical as a sponsor to get on a team or with a track to help them. We've got to figure it out. These teams now, the cost of everything going up, the cost for these tracks to put on these events, let's not forget them, all the staffing they have and people and the upkeep and the purse money. We've got to figure out how to support them. Otherwise, we're not doing our jobs as fans, as people that love the sport, or for sure as sponsors. And that's a big part of what we're doing. You know, we stepped up and helped Slinger out this year as a title sponsor, one of the title sponsors. We're deeply committed to Five Flags Speedway on a two-year deal, and that will grow to more, I'm sure, with the Bryants down there. So, you know, of course, you think just go with the team, but we've really got to support each other and everything to keep it all going. So I say, yeah, it is unique, but it's just kind of a model that if we could do our little part and show that it works, and with the help of TV now coming on board with Flow and Racing America, it's working and the return's there. And you don't have to spend the type of money I think one would think you have to spend to do that. So it is exciting. And the partners we brought on just keep, you know, they just keep partnering and being with their partners. We're about to announce two new sponsors is really exciting, and a couple more races, at least one or two more races in addition to what's on the schedule now. So all we can do is ride the tide when it's good, and like my wife says, don't mess with the mojo, and get on shows like yours that help promote racing and keep after it. And if anyone would ever want to call us, to ask how the model is working for us or what we're doing, I'm more than happy to try to explain what we know and have learned about it. And if they want to call to get on and help Derek, we don't turn sponsors away. That's another thing. Oh, I don't have enough money for it. We haven't turned a sponsor away yet. We figure out a way to make it work.
Wow, that's neat. Now with that, Marty, I know Sharon has some questions for you. I think we're going to go a little bit over this week, you know, because we had you on. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it back. I'm going to turn it over to Sharon, to our show host.
Thanks, Sal.
Hi, Marty. I'm so happy you were able to come on the show tonight. I know your discussion was something that needed to be said. And I'm going to kind of take it, though, in a little bit different direction. And I know recently you announced that you're also going to be supporting Ella D. Crafton, the daughter of Matt Crafton. They did a really nice feature about that on Fox recently. And when I heard Pepper Jack Kennels was going to be a part of her racing career, I was really excited.
Yeah, Elodie, we've known Matt through, you know, the truck racing and junior joiner for years, and you know, the opportunity, Elodie decided to start doing some outlaw kart racing, I guess it was last year, and when we heard about that, we quickly asked Matt how we could help, and that's more of a thing where we like to give back to the younger sport. And that grew into last year, and then now this year we have a full gig in place with them. I just talked to Matt this morning. She ran last night, finished sixth, qualified second last year. So she's picking it up out there at Millbridge, and new quarter midget's been built. I'm not quite sure when we're debuting that. But, you know, with Elodie, again, that's something my wife is, but my wife is really into her, and she's got the right attitude at 8 years old. She just turned nine, I think, yesterday. She's got the right attributes, and she's not the kid that just sits around and wants to hand it to her. We've been out to their shop, Matt's shop. We've been out there and raced with her last year, and Matt holds her to it. You know, they're not driving a big fancy hauler trailer like one would think. They're actually in his old Southwest Tour trailer when he ran Southwest Tour back in the day, and we've wrapped it a little bit and cleaned it up, but she makes her work out of that, and she unloads the cart and cleans it. And, you know, we'll go as long as we can with her. I think we could, if she wants to race, then we'll race with her up until the point we can't handle it. And then hopefully someone else will.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you guys kind of get behind some of the tracks as well, and supporting the grassroots tracks.
Yeah, we do. And we have another motocross rider out there, Jackson Joyner, Junior Joyner's son. He is absolutely, he's flat track racing out in Bakersfield and up and down Southern California, Central California, on absolutely on a tear on his 50cc, and he's moving into the 65 class. So we've got him as a young rider also coming up, and his stats are winning everything right now. He's unbelievable. So we've got that, and then back to the track involvement, of course, tying it in, Pensacola. I think that's what we call, even though Slinger's right next to us, about 3-4 hours down the road. I've never actually been there yet. Worked with Todd a lot lately on that. But, you know, Brian's down in Five Flags. That's what we call our home track. Just the Southern hospitality. Just from the time they met us and what they did for us at the Derby last year, it was a no-brainer for where our trust was. And to learn, they're helping us learn the whole thing on top of it. And so track sponsorships, to me, you know, we've got to have the track sponsorship, get the cars there, to get the purse up. That Slinger, Todd has been working on it. They, you know, most know they only paid $10,000 to win that. That is a marquee race. It's, you know, Matt Kenseth. There's a lot of great names that go there, been there, they're coming there this year. But the payout, you know, just hasn't quite been there. They needed some sponsor support, and his existing sponsors and us stepped up, and we got that purse up to $20,000 this year, which will be way above that with the bonus lot money, and the TV's in place now. So we want to make those tracks that are sitting right there the next Snowball Derbies. You know, that's the king of the hop there. But, you know, All-American 400 is a big one. Slinger's right there, but let's make that special. And that comes with sponsorship helping the track do that.
Yes, indeed. Well, as a race fan and from the Midwest here, I do want to say thank you for all that you do. It's really appreciated because I'll tell you what, there's been so much more focus on grassroots racing right now, and to know that you've got sponsors like Pepperjack Kennels behind it, it's really great. I wanted to ask you real quick, too, are you a race fan yourself?
Absolutely. I owned a race team back out in California. We raced against Derek. That's how we met him years ago up in what was all called the North State Challenge Series. And we owned what's now what they call the Arca Menards. It was back then, it was the K&N Series. We owned a team there. So we've been involved in racing for, you know, 20 plus years and in and out. And so, yeah, we're huge race fans. We go to probably a half dozen cup races a year. You know, so yeah, we're deeply involved. Jeb Burton, we help him on the side. They purchase a lot of dogs and help us move a lot of hunting dogs through their award foundation. So that's a great thing. And we've slightly moved into the Xfinity series with him, helping them a little bit this year. So not that we're looking to move out of grassroots by any means, and that's a whole nother level of marketing and money, but to have those associations helps with all this, put these things together.
Well, again, thank you for all that you do. It's really, really appreciated. And you pointed out that you are getting good ROI, return on your investment, yeah. And that's good.
Yeah,
I'm happy to hear that.
We're
going to have to close this out for now, but you've got to come back and visit with us again somewhere down the road. It's been a lot of fun chatting.
No problem. Sal's got my number. Anytime I could get on and kind of pitch it and help promote it, I'm all about that, promoting Derek and Campbell Motorsports, but also short track racing as a whole. So have me back on, and I thank you for having me on and what you guys are doing. Every podcast or news story, everything we could do to help get the word out is going to help grow this, and hopefully we'll have a national tour series next year.
That would be fantastic. Now, before you go, how can fans follow you on social media, and are there any other shout-outs that you want to do?
Well, you think of pepperjackkennels.com is our website, and also Cyber Jack Kendall's on Facebook and Instagram. Follow us there. And they could find me on Facebook, message me easily there. You know, just a big shout out to everyone that's supporting Grassroots, Racing America, all the race teams out there, small and big. I mean, everyone's putting their heart into it and all the money they could get into it. So everyone just needs to keep digging. And I keep pitching, please, if you're interested in short track racing, get involved. You know, go up and ask the team after what we can do to help. Buy them a set of tires, pay for their fuel bill. It's not huge cost. They'll be willing to work with you. You'll be surprised. And same with the tracks. And so just thanks for everyone that is supporting short track racing right now.
That's fantastic, Marty Mello. And we'll look forward to talking to you again down the road here. And good luck out there at Slinger Nationals. I know that's a huge event, and I'm so happy it's right there in your backyard.
Yes, sir. Thank you. We're hoping to have a great run with our team out there and Steve Appel Racing. So should be a good time. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Marty. And then like Sharon said, you know, we definitely got to get you on, you know, for another segment, you know, so we can talk some more about this.
Yeah, when the timing's right and it fits into what you guys have planned, I'll just reach out to me and I'll do whatever I can to accommodate that. Thank you.
All right. A big thanks to Marty Mello for being on the show here tonight from Kipper Jack Kennels. I really enjoyed the conversation there, Sal, with Marty, and definitely looking forward to having him back on.
Yes. One day, Sharon, we're going to do a show on you because 10 years and I still have a lot of questions for you. So one day, you can call me Jay that day. I won't accept it. But I know we have to get into the Cup Series. But one show, we're going to, just like you did a show on me 10 years ago, we're going to do one on you. And me, Jay, and all of us are going to, we're going to host it and we're going to pick your brain.
Well, there's not much in there, but you can do your best. I look forward to when that happens. But I tell you what, I've got a great crew here with Banfor Racing. We've got 10 people now, Sal. It's unbelievable because you and I started this, 11 years ago. It was just you and me at that point. So I'm really happy of the fact that we've been able to grow the way that we have and that we've got such a solid group behind us.
Yes, it's been a long haul.
It has. Okay, we've got to get in our Cup Series review here because that race was pretty fantastic as well. We had the NASCAR Cup Series race in the FACO 500 at Talladega Super Speedway. It was Ross Chastain. He needed just one lap to win that race and celebrate with his watermelon on the start-finish line. 29-year-old Floridian led only the last lap to take his second career NASCAR Cup Series victory. He was running third behind Derek Jones and Kyle Larson with one lap left. Larson pulled out of line to the outside, poised to make a pass for the lead, but Jones pulled in front of Larson to block his momentum, while Chastain kept his number one Trackhouse Racing Chevrolet steady below them and maintaining the pace, ultimately pulling away for the win as the other two cars lost their momentum battling each other. And I'll tell you, I was listening to his audio, Sal, because amazingly, I picked Ross Chastain to win this race. And he was in disbelief. He could not believe that they won that race. And he said, I didn't do anything. All he did was hold his line. And it was a fantastic win. I heard, too, it was the same car that he drove at Coda that he won with at Talladega. So that's pretty amazing, too. It was his second career win, second win of the year. Austin Dillon finished second, followed by Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson in third, Martin Truex finished fourth, Eric Jones fifth. Then it was Chase Elliott, Michael McDowell, Alex Bowman, and Kevin Harvick. Eric Jones was the leader when the white flag, at the white flag with Larson and Chastain behind him. And it's just amazing how he won that race. The pole winner was Christopher Bell. He finished in 22nd after Ben coming off pit road that forced him a lap down late in the race. Stage one was won by Bubba Wallace. Stage two by William Byron. There were 41 lead changes among 16 drivers, 16 cautions for 20 yellow flag laps, and the race speed was 148.637 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers there?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how Ross Chastain won that thing. When I was watching it, and man, I thought it looked for sure Eric Jones was going to be, well, first Kyle Larson, and then it looked like Eric Jones, and then I still go back to look at the replay because I'm wondering where Ross came from, but he crossed the line first, and I mean, you know, we've talked about
him
the last couple
of
years, you know, that, yeah, the last couple of years we always talk about Ross. He's going to get a win, he's going to get a win, you know, and I remember, well, last year he went on that skid where he just wasn't productive, and then because the year before that he was really productive, and you know, he's an exciting driver, I'll tell you.
Yes.
Gosh, I'm going to go back. I have to go back and watch it again because I'm still wondering where he came from to win this thing.
He was just in the right place at the right time to take advantage of the opportunity that was there, and it really worked out well for him. Let's hit the driver points before we run out of time, Sal.
Okay, so the driver points are we got – Chase Elliott, that's still leading the points. Ryan Blaney in second. William Byron in third. Kyle Busch in fourth. Alex Bowman fifth. Joey Logano sixth. Kyle Larson seventh. Martin Truex round out the top eight. And then from there, then we go down to ninth is Ross Chastain with two wins. Eric Almirola 10th. Kevin Harvick 11th. Chase Briscoe 12th. Austin Dillon 13th. Christopher Bell 14th. Tyler Reddick, 15th, and Austin Cedric dropped down to 16th. He is our highest rookie so far this season, and Eric Jones is 7 points out from that 16th spot on the bubble, and Kurt Busch needs a win. He's 18th. He's
yes.
20 points down. And Denny Hamlin is still 24th.
Amazing.
But he has the win, so, you know, so he's not too much worried about that. And Brad's slowly working his way up the chain.
Yeah, he's 29th now, which is good news. All he needs is that win, Sal. And as long as he stays in the top 30, he'll be okay. But this season has been amazing with this new car. I think we've seen some of the best racing we've seen in a long, long time. And you know, they were taking care of that. There wasn't, there were a few cautions, yeah, but, I mean, not like we typically see at Talladega. There was that one big one, but I thought the racing was fantastic.
It was. It was really good racing. I mean, like I said, you know, I have to, because of my racing schedule, you know, I used to have to come home and watch it either late at night or, you know, I get out of work, you know, and it's usually the last 20, 30 laps. You know, I'm going to go back tonight and watch, you know, the whole race. And, you know, I know there was a lot of action, and just by following social media, you know, you can kind of gauge it off of there, you know, if the race is really worth going back and watching or if it's just something, you know, that you really don't want to, you know, just take it, you know, for what it was the last 20, 30 laps, you know, 10 laps and leave it at that.
Okay. Well, Sal, just so you know, I don't do it just to you. I actually called Jay Sal the other night. Right, Jay?
Yeah, it happens occasionally to all of us.
Yeah. I'm just not used to it. I've never had her call me Jay as much as she calls me Jay. I'm like, wow, maybe I should just change my name to Jay, and, you know, it'll be easy for her to remember me.
I'm just getting to be an old lady and confused, I guess. But anyway, I just really enjoy having both of you on. We need another person on our Hot Topics tonight, Sal, if you're available.
Sharon, I would. I'm dead tired. I am just beat.
Okay.
I gotta rest, and my wife's making me dinner right now, and she knows that after dinner I got about an hour left, and I gotta back to bed. I get up early in the morning, and one of these days I'm gonna stay around and
gonna
have a really hot one, and I'm gonna hang around.
Jay, I'm gonna give Jay a chance to tell you what he always tells me about Salsa Galloping and our Hot Topic.
What's
man,
that?
I just want one time. I know me, you, and Mike. That would be. We might have to do that one on a separate one, right, Sharon?
Maybe that's a two-hour special.
Oh yeah, you know what? We definitely got to set it up like that. And you know what? And I'll make it a point. It's just hard because I'm West Coast. And when I do the show, it's right in the middle of technically coming home from work in my dinner time. You know, so, you know, it's kind of hard. You know, that's why I have the issue with that.
Okay. Well, we understand, Sal. We appreciate all that you do. And I just wanted you to know that a lot of times we try to interject South Segala into our Hot Topic sound off and what you might think about some of our topics. But it would be good to hear from you.
Oh yeah, I would love. You know me, Sharon. I'm always a hot topic. Before, I mean, I think I've cooled down a lot because I think I was really a bad apple.
You're not a bad apple, but we'd love to have your perspective sometimes on our hot topic conversation. Okay, Sal, go have dinner, and thanks for being on the show with us tonight.
Okay, thanks, everyone. Have a good evening. You guys have fun on your show. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, good night.
See you, Sal.
All right. We kind of held him over there, but we kind of ran over on our interview with Marty Mello from Pepper Jack Kennels. If you get a chance, go back and listen to it. It was pretty interesting. Jay, I think it's just you and I here tonight for our Hot Topic.
All right. I saw you reached out there. I hadn't heard or seen if anybody had commented back. But I know we got lots of comments from Mike's on any of the topics as he was there at Talladega right up until the end.
I did see that. And by the way, I do have a fan at the track article from Mike that I'll look to try to get out early this week, if not tomorrow, because tomorrow I know it's back in, hopefully by Wednesday.
Oh, good deal. I know he said he was going to try and get one done.
Okay, what's our first hot topic here tonight, Jay?
Well, let's see. Where do we want to start? I didn't have my list ready. It pulled up and ready here. I know we had several of them, like I said, on there.
Me start with the first hot topic, and I'm going to put it out there. I don't know if
you had a chance
to watch the broadcast or not, but Dale Jr. was in the booth this weekend at Talladega, and I kind of put it just out there to say your thoughts on Dale Jr. in the booth this weekend.
I know we talked about this leading into it, and I thought he delivered greatly for the sport, for the entertainment, for both NBC and Fox. I mean, I just think that was an absolute win all the way around. Provide some great insight. We talked about it, his experience at that track. Yeah, it may not be. He talked a little bit about driving the current car, next car. He had some experience with it, but the insights he gave in a couple of spots, and truthfully, actually, Clint did as well, but, you know, Junior really, with drafting and the moves they're making, I found really impressive and really, I can't say a casual fan would have necessarily followed all of it, but it wasn't that you had to be a hardcore long-term fan to understand what he was talking about either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he did a great job. I think I think his focus made it easier for Clint Boyer to be more focused as well. And you're right. I think they both gave really good analysis during the race. And and I have to echo what Mike Rozell said. He said just got done watching the race. He was actually at the track, but he watched it on you know the replay, and he said by far the best race Fox has broadcast in years. Dale Jr. was nearly flawless, and I think he elevated the performance of everyone around him. And I have to agree with that statement, Mark. This is a red letter day. I really think he did up the performance of the Fox booth. They just did a fantastic job all the way around during that race and calling the race. There were a couple little things, but overall, I think it was one of the best that I've seen on Fox in a very long time.
Well, and the one thing, and I don't want to take anything away from anybody, you know, Clint Boyer, we know we talked about, you know, kind of gets a little wild and out there at times. Like you said, I don't know if that was just playing off of Junior, that he stayed with it a little more and didn't stray off as often, but he's not to the level of Junior either. And Junior is a history buff when it comes to NASCAR. And him and Mike Joy brought out some very interesting things that aren't well known. So I thought that was really cool. One of them being, and I think that might have even been a little bit of a clip about that being an airport, and that when they sold the land, that was, and I don't remember what the price was, relatively cheap, but that then they could build the track, but had to repave the runway right outside of it, and they did that. You know, just the history and knowledge he brings, and like I said, I know he's a history buff when it comes to NASCAR, so very knowledgeable. It was really impressive, and like you said, I don't know if he brought out better in Clint. I know Mike's one that's always kind of critical of the broadcast. I guess I don't get that into it, but they really did seem to gel really well.
Yeah, I thought they did too. I hope they don't take him away from NBC, though, because I'm looking forward to when Dale Jr. is back in the broadcast booth on a race-by-race basis. As a driver, I know he takes a lot of hits from people sometimes as a driver in NASCAR, but I think about the kind of pressure that Dale Jr. had on him, and as young as he was when his dad passed away, that was a tremendous amount of pressure on him. And I think it took him a while to kind of get comfortable in his own skin. And I see that happening with him just within the last 5 or so years, if not more than that. He's just become so comfortable in his own skin now, and I really like the way Dale Jr. has matured as a person in a lot of ways. I kind of shared some of my own personal story of dealing with Dale Jr. In the media with you individually, but I do think that Dale Jr. is just an incredible person. And I love the stories that he gives us. He was and has been and will be for, I think, a long, long time, the most popular driver in NASCAR and in racing. And I think there's a reason that he is. It's because of the person that he is and the way he deals with people and the passion that he shares for this sport of racing. So I really think he did a fantastic job.
All
any
right.
Follow-up,
you
want to
move up? You know, you mentioned it, and I think Dale Jr. said it himself, the being comfortable in his own skin. I think those might have been even his own words. I know several of them talked about that, but you're right, that pressure of leading the sport, especially after his father, Dale Earnhardt Sr., passed. You know, and I personally think that, yeah, Teresa, if you recall, Teresa Earnhardt said something to the effect of he needed to decide if he wanted to be a rock star or a NASCAR driver. I think that is one thing he did take to heart from her. But also I think the time with Rick Hendrick really is what kind of helped shape that and bring that out of him.
Yes, I would agree with you there. But, yeah, we can go ahead and move on to the next hot topic. I was just so – I think he's been the best – he's been the best guest host for Fox all year.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I mean, and I don't think there's been any bad ones, but I would say he would definitely have to rank at the top. And I'm not one that – I mean, I like him as a driver and as a person, but I wasn't the – I don't know what part of Junior Nation, if you will. So, you know, it's not just because it is Junior, as some people put it. But the next one we got up on the list, we'll just go up the row, I guess. Three teams lost their pit crew member following pre-race inspection. And we've seen this before. You know, is that, I guess the question is that working, as you put it, Sharon? If you want to give your thoughts, I'll come back with Mike's because they actually parallel them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm kind of on the same wavelength. I don't think it is working. The fact that this happens week after week after week, that we're getting all of these inspection failures, you know, at first I thought, okay, they're dealing with a new car. There's a lot to learn with this new car. I don't know if it's still that that is part of the problem here or if people really are trying to continue to push this envelope. But it doesn't seem to me like losing a crew member is really making a difference. I don't think the pass-through penalty is a little bit bigger. But at a track like Talladega, that means really nothing to have a pass-through penalty. You can start a lap down and still get your lap back and be up front racing for a win. So I just think they need to rethink this this problem, this issue with the failing inspections, pre-qualifying and pre-race and post-race and all of that. I think there has to be some stiffer penalties put in place. Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. You're right on that aspect. Obviously, they tried to deter it, and it's not working because we see this multiple teams per week, and especially your bigger teams, Joe Gibbs Racing, Hendrick Motorsports, Team Penske, they got plenty of backup people if need be in the organization. Now, that penalty may hurt a smaller team like, say, such as BJ McLeod, because you take two or three people from his crew, that is his crew, you know. I don't know exactly how many people he's got working for him, but a smaller team, that's going to be a harsher penalty. If you truly want to get these top teams to stop, you're going to have to make it, as we always say, you know, harsher. I don't know. Here, let me read Mike's. He said, nope, clearly not working. Bring on the points, penalties. First bust is a mulligan. Second bust is a 5-point. Third is a 10-point. Fourth is DW, no points for the weekend. I don't know what the DW stands for. But no points for the weekend. Maybe it was supposed to be DQ.
Maybe DQ.
I hate to see it go to that, but just like we've talked about monetary fines, they don't work because teams are like, okay, here's the money, we'll go do it again. So if they really want to stop this, yeah, they're going to have to do something a little bit harsher. And I'm not totally against his point system there. I think that might be a little on the harsh end. But you know, we've talked about that, of the progression aspect to it. You know, once it becomes a habit, as you put it, and I'll let you run through that of accident. But yeah, go with, you know, maybe, and again, 5 points is a lot because that's a whole race win. So maybe go 1 point, 2 point, 3 points. But something definitely has to be done if they truly want it to stop. And I'll let you go, and then I'll come back to the Talladega issue this weekend.
Yeah, I do think that they have to do something that's a little bit stiffer. My thing is always, and this goes back to my chemistry teacher back in high school, she used to talk about this. First time you don't have your homework, that's an accident. Second time's coincidence. By the time you've done it a third time, it's now become a habit, and that's not acceptable. And I've kind of carried that with me through life. It kind of holds true for life on a lot of different levels. So I find it coming up here with NASCAR quite a lot. If it becomes a habit, there's something wrong. It's not whatever you're doing, it's not working. So what do we have to do in order to get the message through that it's not okay to bring a car that is not race ready to the track? Now, I do know, and that brings me to another topic that came up over the weekend, and I don't see it here right now, but the heat was somewhat of an issue, I guess, for inspection this weekend. A lot of cars were blaming the heat for why they weren't able to pass the inspection process. What are your thoughts about that? Did you see that?
Yeah, that's what I said. I'd come back to that. First off, we talked about Junior sharing history. That's the first time I've heard you share that statement you made goes back to a science teacher. So thank you for sharing that history on that. But, yeah, Talladega, and I don't know exactly what part of the car was failing that they were saying it was the heat. I started seeing the Twitter pictures of crews with umbrellas, and I was like, it's not raining there. Yeah, they were trying to keep the car cool. Something was apparently swelling. Now, in a case like that, if it's legit that, a NASCAR would have to look at it, there might be, I hate to say there's an exception to every rule, but generally there is the case. And that was something, obviously, it wasn't just one team. We saw it all up and down pit road. So they might have been a little more lenient with that this weekend with that. And I say, I don't know exactly, if the tires are heating up or something and it's just putting the car all the way out of the measurements, but there was something to it. And the other part, my opinion on understand the owner's points and locking teams in, but I'm used to dirt track racing. The fastest cars that show up, if you got a 40-car starting field or a 38-car starting field, if there's 50 cars there, the fastest race. That's what puts on the show. And to me, that intrigue of, first off, they got to make the race, whether it be through fast time qualifying or, a dirt track, they have what's called the B main or last chance. I really think they ought to go to that. If your car isn't legal, I know it sounds harsh, but I don't want to see it take them out of the playoffs, but go to that of, if your car isn't legal, you don't race. Because I guarantee you then they're going to start showing up with it legal.
Yeah, I think these guys are smart enough to bring a legal car to the track. And I agree with you. If it goes to the short track, goes back to short track racing, they cannot race if they do not bring a legal car to the track. And I'm okay with doing it in stages. First time's an accident, but they kind of get three stages, if you think about it, because they're not necessarily, if they fail a second time, they drop to the rear at start and also lose a crew member. So, Stenhouse and Truex and Castle twice failed. They lost their car chief in pit selection, but Stenhouse and Truex both passed on the third time around. Castle had to go through a third time. Obviously, he passed. But yeah, they need to really do something that's going to make a difference. And I do think that it either has to be the points there has to be a penalty the first and second time that they go through. I think they've already gotten their first time's an accident, second time's a coincidence. We're already at the third to a lot of these teams. So I think that that warning thing has already, they've already gone past that analogy, if you will. So now it's time to start saying, okay, now we're going to take points for the first time you fail, the second time you fail, and by the third time. I kind of agree. If you fail by the third time, you should be disqualified.
You know, I hate to see anybody end up not being able to race, but that puts it back on the teams. Like I said, it depends on how true NASCAR says we want this to stop. Think about it back when they were failing post-race. They said, okay, it got to the point. If you come across the illegal post-race, we're taking the win away. Have we seen that happen since then? You know, I think we had one. I think Joey Logano might have been the only one. I take that back. There's been a couple. That was the win. There were a couple others that did lose their finishing position. But you only see that once in a while. This obviously is happening every week. So to me, it starts with, does NASCAR really want to put a stop to it? Or are they putting on a show saying, hey, we're trying to make them stop. They're just not. Then at that point, then make it to where if you want it that way, put it to a level where the teams, you know, take it seriously. You know, and go with the scale like Mike said. Start with taking playoff points. If that doesn't work, I'm all for taking their starting spot away. I mean, I guarantee if you see something like that happen, there'll be other teams that'll show up and be like, hey, we might be able to get in this race if these guys get DQ'd.
That's true. You know, I look at it from two ways, Jay. One, it's providing a lot of jobs, and, you know, that's good in a way. But think of the cost savings. I mean, we're in an era right now where NASCAR has been looking for ways that they can save costs. This is one way that costs could be saved, especially with the rising cost of different things. If this whole inspection process could be streamlined and be more efficient because the cars are coming in as legal cars, there could be a huge cost savings there alone. Not to mention having to go back and redo it and the time and effort that's spent in doing all of that. I just think NASCAR really needs to take a look at it and really ask themselves this same question, is this working? And if they can answer that and say they think it is working, which I personally don't think it's working, then they have to explain it, I guess, to me as a fan. They don't have to do that, but I wish they would explain it to me as a fan why they keep going through this same process week after week.
Well, I think about just comparing it. There are certain places where they say we don't want this and they enforce it. Being that we were talking about Talladega, the yellow line, they said don't go below it. If somebody does, they enforce that, you know, and it costs them that their position on the track. So, like I said, to me, it's almost like maybe they want to put on a show that they're trying to stop it, but yet they don't.
Yeah, I hope that's not it. But anyway. I'm going to go ahead and make the announcement now, Sal. There I go. I've been calling Sal.
I'm not hearing you anymore, Sharon. Yeah, I'm here. I tried to do the announcement,
okay,
but it didn't go through. Go ahead. You need to do it.
Okay. We're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And for those of you that are tuning in for the first time, please know that we are going to continue to record the rest of our conversation past that time. And that is part of our bonus overtime material that's available on our podcast. When Jay and I are done here tonight, I will go out on Twitter to let you know that the podcast is available. And at that point, you can go to the player that's available at danforracing.com and fast forward to that two-hour mark to hear the rest of our conversation. So, again, that's danforracing.com, and it's all one word. And then you'll be able to hear the rest of that conversation. Again, we don't want any of our new listeners to be caught off guard and not know now how they can hear the rest of that conversation. So we make this announcement every week for our new listeners. Okay, Jay, I apologize for that. I didn't even know I was falling off. I'm glad I was able to get back in under the wire here.
Well, and I had that same thought, and that's why I told you you needed to make the announcement. I was attempting to do it, and I did a fairly good job. However, because when you went off, I thought I might have gotten disconnected, so I figured I'd call back in while you were making the announcement. When I got back on, you were off. I was still on mute, so I couldn't have broadcasted anyway.
Oh, okay. So I apologize again to our listeners as well. But let's go ahead and move on to the next hot topic here.
All right. Well, it gave me some practice. Like I said, I at least did it to myself here, the announcement. So next time I'll be more prepared. I'm going to skip up one here. I know we were kind of going up the list, but I want to skip up one. Mark Martin on Twitter wanted to know why the rest of the motorsports media hadn't been telling us about this, and it was the fact that Chastain's winning car at Talladega was the same one he drove at COTA. And, you know, he's saying the fans love this kind of information, so that needs to be shared. I know I had heard it about Chastain's. I hadn't heard it from any other, specifically from any other teams.
Yeah, I went through Twitter, and I did see a few other I didn't hear it from any other teams. I only heard it about Chastain's team. And the thing is he won with that car at COTA and then turned around and won at Talladega, two entirely different tracks when you think about it. The road course at the Circuit of the Americas versus the Super Speedway of Talladega, those are two entirely different tracks. But it kind of opened the door to the conversation of with the supply chain issues that have been happening. I'm sure they had to do some modifications somewhere along the line to that car. Even though it was the same car, there had to be some tweaks that they must have done to it in order to make it race ready for Talladega. I thought that was kind of cool that they were able to take a road course car and race it on the super speedway. That's got to be some cost savings that's kind of interwoven between that story as well.
Well, and here's the thing, and this goes back to, what was it, 07? This is what the car tomorrow was designed to do, and NASCAR has been trending in that direction. Here with the next-gen car, obviously with the 30, what do you call it, replacement parts, snap-on parts. That's the intent of it, that it can be quickly repaired, as we've seen just on race day. Now, your bigger teams, and, you know, we'll talk about this in a little bit with Trackhouse Racing, not a super power team yet, although they're having a great year. You know, Hendrick Motorsports probably still has X number of cars designated for this track or this type of track because they got that capability. But if you think about it, some of these teams, obviously not necessarily winning with them, but some of these lower budget teams have been doing this all along. They've been running the same car week in and week out. A lot of times you see that's maybe why they run at the back and not aggressive, because that's their only car. You know, they can't afford to lose a car, so they can't be as aggressive with it. So I think this is a great indication of what NASCAR was trying to do. You mentioned it, cost saving. And to see, like I said, Trackhouse isn't exactly a powerhouse team, but they're getting it done. So on a budget. That's great to see. And I don't know, Mike, here, his only comment was, well, great, now they'll try and run it every week. I don't know if he's opposed to him running it every week or what the sentiment means there. I can only guess. I think that's a great thing. If you can run the same car, I mean, that's a good thing.
I would agree. But kind of getting back to the fact that they hadn't seen any of the other media talking about it, I don't recall hearing it on Fox at all or Race Hub at all or anything like that. But I think it's a great follow-up story for media to pick up on and kind of give us more of the behind-the-scenes information about that. There was a post by a Mosey Katarevic on Twitter, his story on the parts that get swapped out to flip the next-gen car between an oval and road course configurations. So there is a way to do that, apparently, between these different types of racetracks that NASCAR races on. But I didn't hear a lot of conversation about it. Really, the first time I heard about it was when I saw Mark Martin's tweet about it, and then I started to kind of do some follow-up research on my own, and that's when I saw that there were some thoughts. What I didn't do is, and I should have looked at the time of some of those posts, if those posts were after Mark Martin made that post or if they were before Mark Martin made that post. But I hope the media does pick up on it and do some background backstory on that.
You know, now I'm trying to think if it was Chastain in his post-race interview that said it, if that was the first. I don't remember where the first I heard it. I heard it during the broadcast. So it might have been that it was leading up to and prior to his win. Or is that, or I think, like I said, I think Chastain maybe said it in his post-race interview talking about it. But, yeah, like Mark Martin's saying, is that's information the fans want. And I'll tell you this, as an announcer and as a broadcaster, you know, that is positive. You see how Mark Martin do it. I want to hit on this. It is not screaming, hey, the broadcast is bad because they didn't do this. He said, hey, here's something you can do better because the fans appreciate it. I, as a broadcaster and announcer, appreciate that positive or constructive feedback as to what can be done better. You know, not the hammering, not the attacking. Exactly. Mark Martin did it very professionally. He just said, hey, guys, can we get more of this? We like it, you know.
Yes, I think that is a very good example of constructive feedback versus just general complaints. But, yeah, I think it's a great backstory, and I'd love to hear more about it. I agree with Mark Martin a whole lot there. I wish I could have heard more about it before the race, or even after the race, I guess, on Race Hub or whatever. But maybe they are working on that, and if there's more to come there, that would be a good thing.
Well, I got to tell you what, I'll wait because you got next topic, but this will lead into one of the other topics that's on our board. Trackhouse is doing a phenomenal job from their first year being last year into a two-car team this year to see what they've done and the way they're going about it. I mean, there's a blueprint of if you're not coming in, and I know that Pitbull brings some money and some sponsorship and popularity with it, but they're doing it a very intelligent way, and I almost want to compare them to college racing.
Yes. Yeah, I'll just kind of chime in here if you don't mind. I think Trackhouse Racing is just setting the bar for new teams coming into the sport. Justin Marks, I am super impressed with him. Justin Marks was a part of, were they part of Turner Scott Motorsports? With Justin Marks?
I believe so.
Yeah, I just think that he learned an awful lot when they were with that organization because that was another organization that was doing so well in the Can-Am Pro Series is what it was known then, and they had started to get into, you know, NASCAR's top three with some of the teams there. And then things kind of closed down due to health reasons for the team owners there. But Justin Marks has taken that into Trackhouse Racing, and I just think his blueprint is something that a lot of teams should be making note of. And yeah, they bring some money to the table there to be able to do what they did with Chip Ganassi Racing, and to take on that equipment. But look at how much better than Chip Ganassi was even doing. It almost makes me feel like maybe Chip Ganassi was starting to lose interest because he's involved in so many different motorsports. His interest maybe was spread across those different areas where Trackhouse is now able to focus that energy entirely on their NASCAR program. And I just think they're getting some fantastic results. But I think a lot has to be said for Ross Chastain, too. Ross Chastain, and I saw some articles about this too, really showed some growth in his experience as a Cup Series driver as well, because Ross Chastain is a very aggressive driver. We know that about Ross, but I think Ross Chastain did show some restraint throughout this race. And I'm telling you, I listened to his audio. I was telling Sal about this earlier. I was listening to his audio during the race, and he was in such disbelief when he crossed that finish line. He was like, did we win? Did we win? And and then it was like, oh, my God, I didn't do anything. I just held my line, and we won this race. I think that was such a great learning curve for Ross Chastain as a driver. Yes, he's aggressive. But I think he learned the value of a little bit of restraint as well, because while those guys were duking it out and being aggressive with each other, he was able to slide in there and get that victory. We saw a fantastic victory from Ross Chastain this weekend. And I think it's not just Trackhouse Racing, it's the dynamics. Somehow it's the dynamics that they've developed within that organization that seems to be working really well, especially for a driver like Ross Chastain.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. And I don't know if we want to transition here to another topic we had was Team 2311 was basically in the same boat. They were a new team last year, two-car team this year, same as Trackhouse. They have Joe Gibbs Toyota support. We thought that they would, even though they were expanding what I thought was a little early. So what is it, like you said, that key element that's missing, which obviously was missing with Chip Ganassi. And we saw that with the fact of Kyle Larson. Because I always said back when he was driving for Chip Ganassi Racing, if he could get into the playoffs, into the Final Four, back then it was Miami Homestead was the season finale, you know, but he could never seem to get to that next level. And then he ended up out the year, but come to Hendrick Motorsports and clicked off 10 wins. And he doesn't have the wins, as many wins this year, but still running just as good. So, yeah, there was something within the dynamic there that just wasn't consistent. I don't know what it is, but you have the entire team. I know both Daniel Suarez, Ross Chastain have made comments about it. Just the total buy-in, belief in each other. And I don't want to say there wasn't that at Ganassi or – you know, at Team 2311, I don't know what that element is, but something's got to be different because they are absolutely getting it done. And it doesn't appear as though 2311 is.
Yeah. Okay, here it is. Bob Hockress has a video up. Trackhouse owner Justin Mark has emphasized with Ross Chastain that Chastain isn't racing for his job every lap, and that patience showed on Sunday. Marks also said his organization is still building, and there won't be any talk yet about preparing for a deep playoff run. But I will tell you, that conversation that he's had with Ross Chastain has made him a better driver. And I think that that helped him to win on Sunday's race at Talladega. And I guess it was during that post-race interview, a couple of articles that have been written about that conversation in the post-race media. I just think that he is learning the value of the patience and what, you know, we talked about a while back. It's not about having bumper cars out there on the track. It's about racing each other with respect and racing as a professional race car driver out there on the track and showing your absolute skill. He was in the right place at the right time. He held his line. He did everything right to win that race, and it was fantastic. And like he said, the conversations that they had, his patience really showed in that race.
Yeah, he admitted it because he said even in that race he had done that move a couple times earlier and it just didn't seem to work out. He said, you know, he didn't know if he was going to get win by staying on his line, but he wasn't going to give it away by making a mistake. Unfortunately, we saw Eric Jones when he tried to make the move, did it a little bit late, and that was one of those where Junior was talked about throughout the entire race, the timing of it. You know, Jones did it. Kurt Busch was already to his outside. They bumped, went up the track, and caused a melee. Chastain came out of it, and he said, I was going to stick to the bottom. I made that mistake earlier in the race. I think he said he did twice. He said he learned from it. So, believe it or not, I mean, think about back, he was running for any team he could in any series, sometimes all three races in a weekend. And that is paying off. You know, that hard work and that reward is paying off now as he got his second victory of the year. So I'm so happy for him. I love seeing the watermelon smash.
Yes. And then he picks it up and starts eating it. That just cracks me up every time. Okay. Getting back to 23-11 racing, though, Michael Jordan was the kind of player in basketball that made a demand on the performance of his teammates, okay? So he brings that to the table, to 23XI, but what he doesn't have is experience as a race car driver. Denny Hamlin has that experience as a race car driver, and we've talked about this. I don't dislike Denny Hamlin. I just think that he has a different personality and a different emotional mindset that does not always help him. Sometimes he's his own worst enemy. So, but somehow, if you could take Denny Hamlin's racing experience and the talent that he has and match that with the maturity of a Michael Jordan that can persevere through all of the adversity. I've seen him play basketball with the flu and be able to just outperform everybody. If you could take that kind of concentration or that level of focus that Michael Jordan can bring to the table, I think that could really, really help 23XI. But then the drivers too, I don't know that Bubba Wallace is a good super speedway racer, and I think he's capable of being better, but he's got to get that support team behind him that can kind of capture those two different sides of the team owners that he has that can help him be a better race car driver as well. But it has to be the dynamic that happens between all of the parties that are involved, that special thing that happens when you've got the right dynamic in place can make all kinds of great things happen. And that's what I think is missing right now in the team at 23-11. Trackhouse definitely has it. Justin Marks is a race car driver, but he also has that focus and that thing that I talk about with Michael Jordan. He knows how to make people bring out the best in themselves, and he knows how to have those conversations to bring out the best in people. So he's got both the Michael Jordan and the Denny Hamlin thing going, where he knows what it takes to be a good race car driver and can relay that in a way that drivers respect and respond to. And Ross Chastain is doing that. So, and I think Pitbull is another inspirational personality that's a part of that team. I don't know how involved he is on a day-to-day basis, but I think that might be the difference. That's just my input.
Well, as you were talking about that, I think back to Kyle Busch, you know, how he handled his young drivers, making the statement, hey, if you can't win in my trucks, the problem's you. You know, just we talked about it with Mark Martin. You know, the difference between a positive, constructive encouragement versus downgrading or demeaning layout of it. So they're doing something right. And, I wish I could say what it was, obviously, with 2311, that element they're missing, just like we talked about Chip Ganassi or something. Because, you know, they got the capability. I think they got a lot of good people in the right places. Kurt Busch, obviously. You mentioned Bubba Wallace. And we've seen him improve on other tracks. Yes, a very good super speedway. He was running, I think, second right there up until the end. Had a shot at going back-to-back there at Talladega. So he was right in the mix. But we've also seen him, like I said, as far as the car capability, and that's where I think there's still something missing with the car itself as well.
Okay.
Because, you know, I mean, certain tracks, it's just, you know, he can run on the short tracks as well. Trying to think which one it was where he picked up his truck victory. Going back to when he was running for Roush Fenway in the Xfinity Series, he ran out of money. He was top five in points. So obviously he can run overall throughout the entire year, but you got to have the equipment under you. You know, it's all got to gel just right. You know, crew chief spotter pairings. I don't know what it is, but they're missing something there at 2311.
Yeah, I would agree. And I'm thinking back to my previous career, and I did a lot of training in my previous career. And I know that there's such a thing as a productivity curve, and you've heard of the bell curve. Well, think about pressure. It's good to put some pressure on people to help them become them better at what they're doing, but there reaches that top, that very top of the bell curve. Sometimes if the pressure goes too hard, you start getting a diminishing return and people are no longer performing. So it's finding that magic spot on that bell curve where you can apply some pressure, but not so much that they start performing poorly instead of better. And that's what they're looking for there. The other thing about that is I know a lot about training. It's about asking the right questions you know, allowing people to come to their own conclusions about what is the right thing to do. And if you ask the right questions versus telling them what they need to do, sometimes people will discover that answer for themselves. And sometimes when they discover it for themselves, it's a lot better than they'll retain it a lot better than if they're being told all the time what it is that they need to do and all of this kind of thing. Because it causes them to really think about their answer when you're asking the questions. So I know that has a lot to do with it too. But you're right, the car might not be there either. There's something in the dynamics that is different. And it's that special it thing that can happen that makes it work. And it's hard to define, but it's a combination of a lot of different things.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. As you were talking about training, I think about the military, same thing. And it's one of those that you got to know the people you're dealing with and how to approach each, because you can't just put out one blanket approach. Yeah.
Yeah. you use different approaches based on different people's personalities, and you've got to understand and be able to identify those personalities and how to deal with those different personalities. Okay. But I really give a lot of credit to Justin Marks, too. I think he's fantastic, but I think Ross is a great driver, too. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about?
I think if we got, 7 minutes? Speaking of personalities, Kyle Busch is definitely a personality. Talking about whether or not he's going to have a ride next year. Let's see. Mike put it up. It came from Jeff Gluck. Kyle Busch on his contract talks with JGR. When would he like to have his future settled? Yesterday, of course, the Kyle Busch answer. Is he getting antsy about it? And he said, no, I'm not getting antsy about it. If it happens, it happens. If it don't, it don't. Goodbye. He said, goodbye is an option. And Busch's answer was, ask Joe Gibbs. Now, I know you added to that with the search for sponsorship. As we know, Mars is leaving with the M&M's brand, so that obviously plays a factor.
Yeah, that's a big factor. They have decided to depart the racing scene, I guess, this season, after this season, and that's leaving a big sponsorship hole for Kyle Busch. Now, in the post that I've seen about interviews with conversations with Joe Gibbs, he's saying that these things take time. They have some things that are kind of in the works, and he feels like a lot of that can be worked out, and they'll be okay with sponsorship for Kyle Busch for next season if he wants to stay. That's always a fluid thing that can happen, because things can be going along smoothly, and then something happens and there's a wrench in the conversations, and all of a sudden it goes south. So that's why a lot of times they don't want to say anything until they've got a signed deal. But they do take time, and, they've got to work with everybody's schedules and talking to the right people. And once you get approval at this level, you got to go to the next level, and so on and so forth. So we just have to kind of wait this out. But I think what Kyle is saying is he's okay regardless of how it works out. He's okay to stay racing. He'd love to do that. But if he doesn't, if it doesn't work out and he loses a sponsorship, he's okay with that too. So I think he's reassuring fans that he's okay with however it works out. And he's okay to walk away. His son Brexton is racing now, and he's at the racetrack watching him race and coaching him on his racing career. And I think Kyle Busch would love to have some time, to even more time to spend with Brexton on the road in his racing career.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like, and we know how this goes with contract negotiations and whatnot, that he's putting it on Joe Gibbs. He's like, I'm ready to sign. Again, I understand the sponsorship deal has to be kind of with it. But I don't see him walking away. I know what you're saying as far as he's got Braxton he can spend the time with. And I was trying to think. I saw there was a bunch of Twitter feed about this of, would anybody else sign him? First off, I think he would have an option to go somewhere else. I can't see somebody not wanting to put him in a car. So there might be some other drivers that are on the hot seat. I know Cole Custer is one that got mentioned at Stuart Haas. So I don't see him walking away. If nothing else, he's got his own truck team. If he is not full-time in the Cups, he can go run his truck full-time, win a championship. I mean, we've seen what he does in his trucks. Just in the 5 races he runs, and lead that team.
True.
So he's got a lot of options, but I don't see him leaving Cup Series. I honestly don't see him leaving JGR either. But even if it were to play out that way, it'd be interesting to see, because, like I said, I think he'd still have options as far as at the Cup level.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jay. I just think that, and he did this in his Kyle Busch way that he does things. But I think that he's just saying he's, and maybe that's what he's saying. Maybe he's saying, if it doesn't work out with Joe Gibbs, then, you know, I could go somewhere else. But honestly, I agree with you. I think it is going to work out just based on the conversations and the comments that I've heard from Joe Gibbs, the team owner. It sounds like they're in the process of trying to work some things out, and it's just going to take a matter of time. And when they're ready to make an announcement, they will. So that's the best case scenario. I think that, you know, these things, there's always the worst case scenario, and a lot of people want to talk about, well, what happens if it doesn't work out? And that's all that this is. And Kyle Busch is saying, yeah, well, if it doesn't work out, I'm goodbye. I'm good to go.
Like I said, it'd be interesting. I fully see it happening where he re-signs with JGR one way or another. It is kind of intriguing to think about what other cup team he could go to. I know there's a lot of things, a lot of different scenarios that could play out. We saw it when he left Hendrick Motorsports. You know, everybody said, well, they can't bring Junior in. There's no room. Well, Kyle Busch was the one out the door. So, you know, things can happen. You never know. So it'd be interesting to see how it plays out if he were to not re-sign. Like I said, I still think he'd go truck racing, and that would open up some weekends, as you mentioned, if he does want to spend more time with Braxton. But I see him with him quite a bit as it is. I think they do some of the racing in conjunction with. I know there's nights where he talks about he's not with them, but they'll have the bet of ice cream over who wins or who finishes better. So I don't know who's coming out ahead and all that.
Well, let me just say, if the worst case scenario happens, and things don't work out, Kyle Busch, when he decides to walk away, will leave a huge hole in NASCAR because he is such a supporter of the other racing drivers, the up-and-coming drivers that are coming into this sport. And he will leave a huge hole from that perspective of mentoring other drivers that are coming into the sport. I hope he would do something like Ron Hornaday Jr. is doing with his driver development program and continue to develop drivers through some type of a development program. I think that would be fantastic. But, you know, I think that's down the road. I think he's already doing it as a race car driver. But I will say, if he does walk away, it would leave a huge hole. On a side note as well, and I read this in the local paper, a local Chicago newspaper, and I put it on the board just as informational, but I think it's worthy to note here that Mars Wrigley, which is based in the Chicago area, is planning to build a $40 million research and development facility on Goose Island in Chicago. So that's a huge investment, and I just have to wonder if that doesn't play into the fact, into the reason why they're kind of stepping away from racing at the end of this season.
Well, we saw this with GoDaddy when they left the sport. They said it wasn't due to anything, cost or anything. It was they felt that they had maximized their exposure, so they were going to go a different route and try and find a new market. Certainly, Kyle Busch has given Mars as much exposure as they could possibly handle. So, you know, it comes down to that. Are we still getting the same gain out of it? Now, like you said, if they're investing that somewhere else.
That's a candy guy.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So it's been great as far as gaining new, you know, the future following of NASCAR by bringing in a lot of kids, because my grandkids, every one of my grandkids asked me, who drives the M&M's car? You know, they all want to know who that driver is. And when I tell them it's Kyle Busch, they go, okay, I'm going to follow him. Every single one of them have said that to me.
Well,
so
and that's
he does
part of the marketing plan, yeah.
Exactly right. Okay, we are at the top of the hour, or actually past the top of the hour now. So, Jay, let's go ahead and do our wrap-up here.
All right. You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. Coming up this weekend, and I'll talk a little bit more about Thursday, but I'm going to stay home for the weekend, or in town for the weekend. Not one you hear from me a lot, but you will throughout the rest of the summer. Columbus Speedway, the baddest bull ring in the South. This weekend, I'm going to step outside my comfort zone and call some go-kart racing. So that's going to be a little different for me.
Still sounds like fun.
Okay. Well, I always have fun no matter what I'm doing.
Exactly. Especially if racing is involved. I will just say that I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter and Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else on social media, including our Fan for Racing website at fanforracing.com. So I am looking forward to our show on Thursday night. We were going to have Raja Karuth, but we're running into problems because Raja is involved in some iRacing, and so he's not available to be on the show for Thursday night. So instead of Raja, we're going to have Nick Sanchez come back on, and Nick Sanchez just won the ARCA race out at Talladega. So I'm looking forward to talking to him about that victory. So look for that on Thursday night. Tonight we had Greg Van Hulk to finish 11th at the race at Talladega in the ARCA Menards Series. That was a great finish for him, and I think a confidence booster. He said he was a little bit disappointed in it. They were hoping to have a better finish at Talladega, but I think that's coming for that organization. Also, at the third half hour, we had Marty Mello, who is the owner and general manager at Pepper Jack Kennels, a big sponsor within the racing world, and especially grassroots racing. He's not only sponsoring Derek Thorne on his national racing schedule this season, including Slinger Nationals, which is also located in the same state as Pepper Jack Kennels, which is Wisconsin, but also they're supporting Ella D. Crafton, Matt Crafton's daughter, and he mentioned on the show tonight that they're also a sponsor behind Ty Junior. What is the crew chief's name? I can't think of his name now.
Junior Joyner,
that's what I'm trying to say. His son is also racing, and they are a sponsor for him as well. So they are very much involved in grassroots racing. They also sponsor a lot of the tracks that are in racing. He talks a little bit about that as well. And it just was a really good interview. So looking forward to having him back on the show as well. So also, a big shout-out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in, whether it's the broadcast or the live, the podcast. We appreciate your time out of your schedule to hear what we have to say. And we always encourage you to come back for our Thursday night show, which starts at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, and we'll be back again on Monday. So with that, Jay, a big shout out to you and to Sal for being a part of our broadcast here tonight. Appreciate all that you guys do and the conversation. It's always a lot of fun.
So is that a shout out to me being Sal or Sal being Jay?
I don't know. I get you guys confused all the time. I am constantly calling Sal Jay, and I even started now calling you Sal. So between the two of you, I'm confused.
Well, you got us both covered, so that's a good thing.
Okay, so with that, I guess we're ready to say goodnight.
All right. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Okay. Good night, everybody.